Welcome, and you're listening to Geekologist Radio, a division of the Mulehorn Gaming Network. And meow.
Shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Chris, aka Two Wolves. Welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through lots of hype trains, lots of cues, and a bunch of other things. This is part two, take two. So we're gonna hop right in. Hey, Fouts, how's it going?
I'm good. Hang on now. Is this thing on?
Yeah, I know. My mic wasn't on for the first 5 minutes of this bad boy. So hey, I caught it this time as opposed to the last time when we had to re-record.
I'm just glad we didn't have an hour and a half re-record.
I'm also awake. So that's a positive. Cajun seems awake. What's going on, bud?
I'm very much awake, and we started recording the episode later because Mr. Two Wolves here wanted to watch the end of the Cowboys Giants game as
a big Giants fan,
and he got to watch the Giants win.
Big deal.
And I got to be in Dallas here and watch the Cowboys lose, which is going to help me out in work because I'm really tired of all the Cowboys fans just being all uppity about the Cowboys this season. So
we're going to get right into the queue because we got so much to talk about tonight.
Yes, we do. Let's go in our queue.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
All right, first big one in the queue was one we talked about last time was Flash, Arrow, Legends, Supergirl crossover. And one thing I was thoroughly wrong about because we're right in the middle of airing it was I thought it was going to be four episodes and ended up being just three. There was no fourth episode of the crossover with Supergirl in her own. It ended after Legends. And that was something I was directly asking Chris about. Chris made a
Yeah, I was talking about the fact that they marginalized Supergirl, and I heard that. And I'm not a big fan, so I'm coming from as an outsider who hasn't really watched it. I've just read some stuff on it and heard the marginalization. Do you think that did they marginalize her character in all of the episodes, and B, maybe the transition over to her from a different network might have caused the reason why they didn't have a crossover with some of the other shows?
Well, she's fully on CW now. Like, CW has the show now from CBS. So all four of those shows are fully produced and owned by CW now.
But were those other shows up and running prior to them recording? Like, you know what I mean? Her shows starting on the transition from CBS over to... Okay.
Yes, yeah. So her second... Yeah. So they're all kind of coinciding. And so it's just kind of... It's kind of surprising that they didn't have something for her. Or you could be right, because I really don't follow her show at all and live, and it could actually be delayed and could be a delayed airing of it. But I did read some stuff that they did have an episode where a few people went over there after the crossover episode because they ended it with kind of her being able to enter the Legends Arrow Flash universe because it's basically multiple Earths. And so Flash Arrow Legends takes place on Earth 1. She's on Earth 28, I want to say, on a separate Earth. So she can't just, like, go to a different city. She has to, like, portal travel to a separate Earth in a different timeline. So they have a way. Yes, yeah, they gave her a little trinket now, a little doohickey. So now she can cross back over and join them if they need to.
Was the crossover at least interesting?
Very much so. Very good villains, lots of superheroes using their powers. They had ups and downs. It is a CW show. It had ups and downs in it that some scenes just really weren't needing to be there. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm glad they did it. Can't wait for the next crossover next year, which is going to be, they're not going to do one this year. It's going to be next year. But the next big thing is going to be the Joss Whedon musical.
Yeah. Oh, no. We need to have Abstracticus on.
Yes, we do.
Just to talk about that. Only because if it wasn't for his such a strong feeling towards that in prior episodes. But he definitely needs to be speaking about
and,
it.
And Faust needs to prepare his bleep cannon. all of the bleeps.
The bleep cannon will be ready.
All right, I know that we definitely want to talk Westworld tonight, but before we do that, we're not going to talk about The Walking Dead tonight's episode. We're going to speak about last week's episode and try to catch everybody up on it. What were your thoughts as far as Carl trying to infiltrate into the Savior's camp, as well as just kind of Negan in general in this episode? Because some of it really caught me as like, okay, enough is enough. Like, I just, as the Negan character in general, I'm almost to the point where it's the tipping point for me with Negan. At first, he was really badass in the first episode, and it's like, yeah, Negan. And now it's like, dude, every single time you whistle and you do this and you do, and it's the same stuff over and over and over again, which is attuned to the character, but man, is it getting old.
Yeah, to me, I'm done with him. Like, not the character, but I think that's the point. I think the point is just to be this, like, you want to be just, I'm so done with this guy. Just somebody kill him already. He's so annoying. And because he came in so strong and charismatic, but it's just like, oh, he's just a prick. And you think of the worst prick you've ever met in your life, and it's like, he's that guy.
I thought it was pretty interesting, the breaking down of Carl, just like he broke down Rick, to the point where you could see Carl, and we had talked about the fact that, you know, maybe Carl was going to find Negan interesting at some point, you know, when he went and met with him. And it's almost like he finds him sadistically interesting. I don't know. It's like really weird. It's the stuff about the Saviors. Even when he took the eye patch off, he was pissed at first. But then he's just like, it was almost like he was free of having to hide some stuff. So I don't know. It's almost like he was kind of semi looking up to Negan a little bit, which was creepy to me. I mean, it just came off a little. His character came off a little weird.
Yeah,
that's all.
And there's definitely like you want him to just pull the trigger and shoot Negan when he's sitting there. Like, where's Negan? He's like, he's right here. Like, oh, points his gun at him. Like, I'm gonna. Now I'm Carl. I'm gonna do a little exposition, and it all goes to crap right there. But we knew he couldn't because the character Negan character needs to continue for the show to continue, at least this season, maybe next. And yeah, that we knew that wasn't gonna happen. But one thing I did like they did in this episode, and something that they didn't do in all the others, was they cut between the characters. Yes,
they did.
Because besides, I can't think of any episode this season where they actually cut between the different storylines. Each storyline was one episode, and that was, I think, a giant misstep by them, because they could have just done everything that was going on, have the big points edited in so it kind of crosses over, and so each episode has some big points in it, but you could cut between them, and so they didn't have these single exposition episodes where some just fell flat on their face and others were just too long to be in one spot.
The part where Rick was reading the sign and going towards the boat that was out in the water, first of all, seeing the dead in the water, like floating, was pretty awesome, still alive. But the fact that guy was out there and like he says, he's like, we're going to have to go out there. Like, you know, we have to go out to get this thing. So like, how the hell are they going to get across that water in order to get to that boat, in order to collect all the stuff that's on there? Because obviously that guy on there has a ton of stuff, which that subplot was kind of cool. And then you got to see Michonne kind of show just who she was in general. Like, everybody wants them to take them to Negan. Take me to Negan, take me to Negan, take me to Negan. And Michonne smashed that girl's face in on that dashboard, and I was like, ooh, yeah.
Take me
that's,
to him.
Michonne's back. Yeah, Michonne's back. Like, it was pretty – the best part was – early in the episode when she slices the first few, and then when that truck lines up and it sees all the bodies lined up on top of each other, I thought that was just an awesome symbolism of, like, basically you can't pass anymore. Like, I'm waiting for somebody to come along and I'm going to take them out, which I thought was really cool.
I really like that you're having all these non-Rick people coming up with their own ways of fighting Negan. They're like, they're all fighters. They're going to come up with their different ways to fight Negan. Rosita with the bullet. Just make me a bullet. Come on.
Oh, my God. Rosita and the bullet thing, dude. I'm over the bullet. Like, just... leading into tonight's episode, which, we're not going to talk about, some of the things that we know are Rosita has the bullet, and this is going to be, you know, something that we feel is probably going to cause something to occur in tonight's episode. At least I would think so. Cage, and I know you really can't talk.
Because I'm the only one who's seen it. I'm just
seen
looking
the episode.
Off into space right now. Like, la, la, la.
Yeah, I haven't. So I'm going to try to give some things that a person who hasn't seen the episode would, you know, kind of some points. Also, the note to Norman Reedus about the escape, which I have a feeling, and I saw just a quick preview of what tonight's episode was going to be. Only, you know how they show those snippets of The Walking Dead snippets? It's basically showed a snippet of Rita trying to escape. And then you have a feeling that you're going to see some type of confrontation between Rick and Jeffrey Dean Morgan at some point, because he's going to come home and he has that baby on that rocker, and that's not going to sit well with Rick. And I think the baby could be a tipping point for them. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in the episode. It's all guesstimation on my end. But those are some of the key things that I think, or some of the points that I think are highlights out of that episode.
Yeah, and I'm full zip right now. And I know how it ended. Yeah. I'll keep it to next week.
You know,
a bunch of stuff that people need to be looking out for. A few other things that are going to be cool. So, yeah.
Because I know that they're going to be hitting some points with some other characters, because they have to try to do some flashbacks. You're going to find out what's going on with Maggie. You really need to go find out what's going on with Carol and in that situation too. So, and honestly, we haven't seen Carol in forever, and we haven't seen what was that, 3 episodes ago? I think is the last time we saw Carol. Yeah. And so we have to go through all of those things too. And they have to wrap that up in a nice bow so that in February we can watch this all over again.
Yeah, and I'm really glad it's coming back in February instead of March, April, May. Like it's coming back in 2 months or less than a month or less than 2 months. So about 2 months.
And as far as shows are concerned, and before we hop into the Westworld discussion, we as geekologists, I know, have been talking about, you know, where are we going to go next as far as shows. I mean, we're going to try to keep up to date as far as, you know, regular episodes of weekly shows are concerned. But we're looking into other episodes or episodic shows that fill in that midterm, because Westworld for us is a huge hole. I know that it's been such a big deal for our show. I mean, we're really into it. And so I know that it's funny because other podcasts that I listen to are all seeking the same thing. You know what I mean? They're all looking for, like, okay, what can we get? What can we dig our teeth into? Because this was a huge... for anybody who watched Westworld, I think the best part of Westworld, and before we get into the finale, was all of the guessing work. Like, you know, is Ford this? Is the Man in Black this? Is, like, all of that was so Lost-like. And we haven't had a show like Lost in so long that everybody was craving it. And in a world where we have now, where Lost didn't have Twitter and Reddit and everything else that can exploit it, it was able to hold everyone's attention for the amount of episodes it did, which is just fantastic for a show.
Right, and I've seen actually some criticism on the speculation that and two-sided. One is was the show giving away too much, and that they were hinting at the things throughout the entire season that the show, knowing Reddit was and things like that were out there, hinted at it too much and allowed too many of their things to become just a fact. And I kind of disagree with that. I think that, like, if you're going to go out of your way to research that and to make that to figure out what's going on in the show, then you're going to be picking that style of viewing the show and research. But the other one I do find to be pretty accurate is that a lot of the reporting sites out there that were titling articles, they were titling articles like "William is the Man in Black" and things like that, where as fact, way early, and people who were not wanting to know these things and just, like, as a Westworld fan, seeing that stuff in passing, could not avoid that. And that the actual people who were writing in this space should have been a little more cognizant on this is a theory, although it has a lot of things. A lot of tentacles. You should report it as a theory and just list it as either Westworld theory or stuff like that, instead of these clickbait titles that a person watching the show can't avoid.
Yeah, it's really hard. Like, with those type of titles, it's one of those things where when you're on a Reddit, the only way to get attention is to have a clickbaity title. So you try to throw out everything you can, and so you might be the same person that throws out 15 theories, and whatever one draws the most attention, that's the one you keep writing about, or that's the one you keep throwing the most attention to. So let's dive in. Let's get into Westworld and let's talk about The Bicameral Mind, which, by the way, was mentioned by Ford in episode 3. Mm-hmm. He talked about the Bicameral Mind, and he was talking to Bernard Arnold about it when it happened. So I thought it was really interesting that they made a this is the first time that a title has made a reference to a previous episode, which I thought was very interesting.
So it's something we already knew, wasn't something that was new coming into it. And something I've done in previous ones on the titles was discuss them. And I think we hit this previously, but I'll hit it up again with what a bicameral mind is, or what bicameralism is. It's an hypothesis in psychology that argues that the human mind once assumed a state in which cognitive functions were divided between one part of the brain, which appears to be speaking, and the second part, which appears to be listening and obeying. So
there's so many things going on in this episode, and so like this is going to take a bit. So let's talk about initially. Let's go into Maeve's storyline, because I think that's the easiest one to kind of separate from everything else.
Right, because she's physically separated from everything else.
Separated. It's kind of scary. Can I bring up something that I've listened to and I thought in my own head, and I was trying to we were all kind of trying to rationalize this. The desensitiveness of death in Westworld, being that when you watch somebody die, it's at a point now where, oh, they'll just come back because
they're AI.
You know, they AI. And so killing people now has become so, like, it's used as a plot point in a lot of shows because it draws attention. But in next season, and I know I'm jumping ahead a bit, this is going to be really difficult for them. Because if they try to kill somebody, it's going to be, well, they'll probably come back. The tension when someone dies, it may not be there quite as easily as it was in the first season. Because Maeve, she caught herself on fire in that, you know, burned herself up real quick. But she came back.
Yeah, because
Bernard shot himself. Yep, he came back. It's like, okay, so everybody who dies has a potential to come back. That's great, but eventually everybody's just onto the game. It's like, well, they'll just come back. Or if they do or do not come back, like if they do come back, it's like, well, I wasn't really surprised. You know, I just kind of expected it.
And that's the thing. We're going to assume that every AI who's physically shot or something like that has the ability to come back, and it's always going to be there. But a human, on the other hand, if we know for a fact that that was a human that dies, then we know that person's not coming back as a human. The only way they would come back would be if a copy was made as an AI. But yeah, it just loses that finality, and it's almost opposite of Game of Thrones there, where Game of Thrones is just like, if we lose a major character, it's just going to hurt so much because you're losing that person, that character you care so much about. And like here, you lose a character you care so much about, they're back every episode, or they'll die three times that episode.
Speaking about Game of Thrones, I know we're jumping a little bit, but when Jon Snow comes back, it almost makes death in Game of Thrones anymore like, oh, well, maybe somebody else will come back too. Because Jon Snow can come back. So that's what I'm saying. Like, if Bernard dies, or the ending, how it ends, if somebody passes away, it's like, well, they might come back. So I'm not really that worried about that person. So, I mean, I know it's trivial, but like to me, it loses the tension that these shows have because it's like you're on pins and needles. When I originally was in Game of Thrones for the first four seasons, if somebody died, hey, they're not coming back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's it. Now it's like, well, if Jon Snow came back, somebody else could come back. And in this one, for sure, I mean, Bernard dies. And then we talked about last episode. We were like, well, is he really dead or could he come back?
Sure enough.
And we all kind of agreed, I think, that he has a shot to come back. And then, of course, he comes back right away.
Exactly. And it was even kind of fake, too, because when his character was killed, he basically on Twitter just said it was a good run with everything.
Oh,
and it straight faked everybody out and then came right back in that episode and is going to be back.
What's kind of awesome is he says in the show about killing himself that he – Are you going to be okay, basically? And he says, well, I missed the part of the shield that would have caused my brain or the high-end functioning to stop. So in his killing himself, which was caused by Ford, he did it intentionally so that it was enough that it would kill him or, you know, whatever, cause him to shut down, but not enough that it would take away anything that was part of his major brain. Because he states that when he says, when she brings him back online and she says, are you okay? And he said, yeah, I grazed it, but I didn't hit the shield. Yeah. So I picked that up when he said that, and I'm thinking, man, was that a – because there's a difference. I think the major thing in this episode is the difference between people that are sentient and see people that are conscious. And the major focus for Ford and the whole thing about the maze, which, I mean, I think we all looked a little too far into the maze. The maze was – what we found out to be was basically a child's game with a ball in it that kind of got around and got to the center. And so – we always thought that the maze was Maeve getting out. Mm-hmm. But the reality was is all of them being introspective and looking in.
Right.
And it was finding consciousness inside, which I believe you talked about a couple of episodes back. We were talking about being conscious and what it was like to have your own thoughts.
Right. And that was my thought of the maze. I always thought the maze was an AI's unlocked mind. And I always thought of it as the opposite, though, an AI getting out of the maze. I never thought of it as getting in and becoming conscious as the maze, but I always thought of it as the unlocked mind.
And so we found out that at one point in the beginning of this whole entire thing that Arnold wanted this and that Ford was against it and right. said that they could not be sentient and also have consciousness. And then in the death of Arnold, we found out that Ford realized, wait a minute, maybe I was wrong. Maybe they can be. But I need for them to be strong enough over time to find their own consciousness. It's one thing to be sentient, which means they have their own thoughts, but it's another thing to be conscious and be able to hear your own thoughts and be able to know your own thoughts. And so I have to build you up in order to become that. So watching it kind of scared me a little bit because people really downplayed Ford a lot, like he's the bad guy. But maybe not so much.
See, that's the one thing that I think is a potential plot hole for the season, is that Ford has this, like episode one, he seems sympathetic. At the end, he's sympathetic to the AI. All this in the middle, he treats the AI like garbage, just like slicing that one's face. And like, they'll cover it up. It's not human. It's not a thing. But the whole time, he knows his final story is to release them and become sentient. Why the facade? Like, why be this jerk? Like, I think he did it in front of Bernard and a tech who were both sympathetic to the AI in the room. Was like, it's okay, clearing up. Why do those things that he did? And I think that's a plot hole if his character having that being unsympathetic to AI as sort of a way to not make the fans think he's going to do what he did at the end.
So going back to Maeve, so obviously they recreate Maeve. We talked about last week that the only way for her to escape is to not have the explosive in her spine, which is basically the reason why she did it. They rebuild her. She doesn't have the explosive. She also brings to life a few of her friends, with Armistice, yeah. One of them, which, first of all, Armistice in this whole thing. I have some arguments about why I think it was really crappy about how she acted because of some certain things, but her scenes were all badass. Like, so they were really cool, including the tail end scene, right. Which was like the cutaway scene, which was really, really good.
And one other plot hole about the tail end scene and other scenes, the human soldiers can't shoot for crap and hold their finger off the trigger too much. You're like, don't move. Stop moving. Seesaw motor functions. Just shoot it.
Just shoot it. So Maeve was able to bring her alive first. And I knew that she was going to bite the finger. Like, I knew the finger thing was coming. And I like, closed my eyes because I didn't even want to watch her do it. I'm like, I know what you're doing. Like, I can see, like, that was one of those things where you can watch it happening before it happens. I'm like, oh, don't do that. And so it's really funny because they had, like, a homoerotic scene with Hector going on for, a bit, like, right while the dude had the headphones in. And you're watching Armistice just take care of people's business, like with that snake tattoo, which, by the way, I sent a post to you guys, and I had no idea that she was one of the people that had lost their mind sitting inside of that church. But that kind of goes to the fact that all of the people that were Gen 1s, we'll talk about this, all eventually went, air quotes, crazy.
It's basically one of the points, I think it was at that time, but they did a lot of cutaway scenes. I forgot which episode it was, but they're talking about AI who, when they listen to the voice in their head, isn't it background? The voice, if they think the voice speaking to them is themselves, then they're sane. If they think the voice speaking to them is God or deity, or it's not themselves or the creators or anything else, they go nuts. Like they, if they think it's themselves or their code talking to them, they're fine, which is what Dolores is. But all the others, and Armistice was actually shown in a quick cutscene where she was actually like cutting herself, like 35 years ago, because she went nuts because she couldn't put together what Arnold's code was doing to her to try to become conscious.
Everyone that was down in cold storage, so that whole army of people that were down in cold storage were all of the year ones that were air quotes hobbled, which basically were in the midst of doing the maze and hearing the voices and were shut down because of it. So those were that's who all of those folks were. So everybody downstairs was hobbled, and that's why you originally saw Mr. Abernathy down there, because he was part of the hobbled. Right. If they were going bonkers, that's where they went. And so Maeve was able to get those two online, and she gets Bernard back online, and he points out to her, listen, your escape and everything is part of a plot point that is put on by somebody else, and you are going to act this way and do this. And she says, hell no, I'm not going to do that. And he said, yes, you are. And so she just runs. And so, which, by the way, she runs into Shogun world, which I thought was awesome.
It's they didn't confirm if it's Shogun or Samurai. They asked Christopher or John that.
He called it Shogun he called it Shogun, and he said that it remind West and Shogun shows are very similar in style and thematics, and so that's why when they asked him previously if they were going to do Future World, he said, well, kind of, sort of, but we're going to do our own twist on things. And Shogun World is not part of the Westworld backstory the movies, but it is going to be part of this They didn't say it was going to be in this, you know, this upcoming season, but it was going to be part of that backstory, part of that world.
Right. And it's that, because he's a big fan of both Westerns and the samurai movies that kind of have the very same feel to it, and so those two are going to be right in line with each other. And we know that, and we know now there's at least more than one park, because they revealed that in Maeve's note. How far they dive into other parks, other park AI's consciousness, all of that stuff is going to be all to be seen in the future. But man, when they crossed into that, And I was like, what is that SW?
And so you were talking about Maeve receiving a note. And basically, which one of the tech dudes gave it to her? I can't remember his name. Do you remember
Felix and
fan?
Sylvester? They're basically Felix, two cartoons.
I think
cats,
it was Felix.
Basically.
Yeah, really. Felix. Yeah, Felix. I believe it was Felix. And Felix gave her the note that said, Park 1, Sector, blah, blah, you know, place, whatever. So when he said Park 1, that was the big hint that there are other parks. And this was prior to the Shogun thing even showing up. And so then they really throw it in your face, and they're like, hey, by the way, there's a second park. So, which, if you're watching this show, you're thinking to yourself, so has Ford really just focused only on the Westworld part because it's the first?
Right.
Or is Westworld really the first? Is Shogun... Park 1, is that where this girl is at? Because that's where the air quotes daughter, remember, her cornerstone is this girl. And so, and all of these characters are based on that cornerstone. So she's pretty aware that this girl doesn't exist as far as in real life, that it's not really her daughter. So she makes it through the gauntlet. They take out all of these characters inside the building. She gets to the elevator. Hector asks if he can come downstairs at the elevator, and she gives him the smooch, and she's like, yeah, by the way, you're not coming with. And she goes downstairs on the elevator. She wears that hot black dress. By the way, Maeve hot. Second, she goes, her attitude is ridiculous. Like, I love it. She's probably one of my favorite characters in the
entire
show.
Start that way. It started that way. It was kind of like a, who is this? Like, why are they concentrating so much on the madam?
Didn't it change? It really. And, like, we kept saying that Maeve was a subplot. But there's a couple of things that happen. Maeve hops on the train. She sees the woman and the daughter, which triggers the feelings back to her cornerstone, which is the daughter. Maeve is given a purse that she does not take off of the train. So does the purse have information that Mr. Abernathy was originally supposed to have? So it could be the information that needs to be passed.
And she was the one taking it out of the park all the time.
And she was the one taking it off the whole entire time. And so what part of this did Ford control? Did he control the fact that she was supposed to get on the train? I believe the fact where she goes from sentient to consciousness is when she makes the choice to go after the daughter because she was programmed to leave and not programmed to come back.
I've questioned that since I saw the episode. Because the tablet was broken right at that point, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Was she programmed mm-hmm. to leave?
It said the escape.
Yep.
And so I'm thinking that that meant that. But it could have easily been the other thing. What I thought would be an awesome twist is what if the person that was supposed to actually take the stuff from her and screw this whole entire thing up was the mother and daughter? What if the mother and daughter scene was supposed to take the information from her unbeknownst to her and screw this whole thing up and cause her to think back to her cornerstone and cause this whole entire scene to happen? So I'm like, oh, that could be it too. So, I mean, so Maeve makes the choice to get off of the train. The other thing that I want to bring up is the fact that the train, when they speak about where they're going to, it's to, air quotes, the mainland. Wherever Westworld is located, or wherever all of these worlds are located, I have a feeling it's on an island just like Lost, and the only way to get to this thing is by train. You get in by train, you get out by train, which is why the information has to be escorted out. Because think about it, if Westworld was in a park that you could walk into like Jurassic Park is on an island too, right? If you could just walk into it, the infiltration into this park in the year 2018 or 2019 would be very easy. Right. Somebody would be able to find their way to get in. The reason why these AI can't escape and the reason why the people can't get in is because this is, you know, just basically closed off from the rest of the world.
So I had two thoughts on that. Either Westworld was an island or a dome. Because the mm-hmm. scene at the end where it's Teddy and Dolores, you see the moon, it looks really close, and all of a sudden it becomes like a spotlight. And I couldn't tell if the spotlight is just one that was out there in the ocean that they clicked on, or if it actually, like, just like the Jim Carrey movie, just he was going into...
Hashtag
Truman Show. He just is like, it's just a dome that looks like a wall, and they can just control the light. That goes around at all times, control the sun and everything, which is what I really think that they can do in that world. And they just make the dome water around and make it an island. And it literally could be an island, but I really think that there is a physical dome over these worlds that they control the weather as well.
All right, so we're going to hit the second big plot point. Yeah. The fact that the man in black was named as William.
Yes.
Yes. Now, like, this is something we've been talking about for a while now, and I think everybody's been talking about it for a while right now. There was some kind of discrepancy where we thought that it could be Logan, it could be somebody else. Like, mm-hmm. just, I think it was more that we were just trying to reach for straws at this point. Like, everything pointed towards William.
And we were expecting the writers are going to be, like, pull the rug out, like, ha ha.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But we found out that we got a little bit of a backstory. We saw that the whole thing with the naked Logan and the black, a feather on a horse. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, I'm going to tell your dad that you're nuts. And I'm going to convince him that he should invest in this. It was just the whole twist of William was really creepy. And it seemed really quick to me, mm-hmm. especially for a guy that down the line turned into Man in Black and wasn't the man in black, unless this was like the festering version of himself that he would eventually become later on down the line, going back into the real world as somebody who was very callous. And I can see those points, but it just seemed really, really fast for me. That's all.
Yeah. And I think that could have been a fast cut too, because he comes into the park clean shaven and he leaves with a beard. That yep. almost looks to me, it looked about at least 2 weeks of growth. Which, I mean, that's still a short time to change your person, but it wasn't just like a couple of days. This was, I think he was there a long time doing everything in the park, doing lots of stuff to find Dolores and go through this entire thing and do this entire change as a person. But I'm really curious. I really, really hope they continue the flashbacks now that we know that they're there as to William's rise as the Man in Black, and at least give us some scenes showing kind of what happened with him and Logan after that.
I would hope so, yeah. Because I mean, you got some flashbacks about him getting pissed off because you saw the can getting kicked, and it was another dude going up to Dolores, and she didn't recognize Jimmy or William.
Yeah, William.
So that was kind of you could see where he was starting to get angry about that, and then you could there was a couple of scenes that just didn't make sense to me, like the whole thing with the horse and him being naked and the symbol of the black feather, which I've read some things about what the black feather means, like new beginnings or the ending of a major conflict or those type of things. Right. I don't know if that's what they were going for and that's what they were looking at. There was also another thing that came up later in the episode. I'll talk about this, that was like really standout-ish, but it was like, where the hell did that come from? And why, we haven't even discussed these sort of things. So they were right. Reaching for certain spots. The thing I'm talking about, and we'll talk about later, is the wolf, which was like, where the hell is that coming from? Like, yeah. It didn't make any sense. So
yeah, it's like, is this Rise of Iron? Are we
really? Yeah, yeah, right. And so, but the Man in Black thing was really drawn out, just to show that it was the same person. It was like, I know a guy. And I know a man named William, and he goes to this big thing. It's like, Jesus, dude, just say that's who you are. Yeah. We get it. We know who you are.
Yeah, but the thing is, we know who he is, and I think I mentioned last episode, but I have a coworker, older coworker, about my dad's age, who's big. Him and his wife are into Westworld too, but he saw none of this coming. He didn't see Arnold as AI, Arnold as William, Arnold as Bernard, William as the Man in Black. Dolores as Wyatt. He didn't see any of this stuff at all.
Do you also know who didn't see the William as the Man in Black? Dolores. Because when he told her, she didn't blink an eye. It wasn't like she was surprised. She wasn't mad. She wasn't sad. She was just like, oh, okay, great. It was so weird. Like, there was no emotion shown.
Yep. But
it's like it didn't register.
But I think they drew that out for the William Man in Black one just for people who had no clue, because I think we're in that little small less than 10% range that knew it was coming and knew what it was. But I think there's this whole other group of people that had needed that exposition to explain it to them, what it was, and needed it drawn out exactly, like, this is what you missed, instead of just throwing it at them. It's like, haha, you missed this, and they'd be like, where did that come from? Well, we would have gotten that. They were alienated maybe 90% of the audience doing it. Just a quick throw.
I felt bad for Teddy in this episode.
Yes.
Because James Marsden in this entire show was a pawn.
100%.
And almost a throwaway character.
Yep.
Which really sucks. Because like we talked last week, oh, he's on the train. Maybe it's his new beginning and he's part of the narrative. Because we talked about him being part of the narrative, which he was. I mean, he was part of the narrative. He was the diversion part of the narrative,
right?
Because it didn't have to do with the main plot point that ended the season. But what a waste. Like, I just felt like the character meant nothing. They tried to give him all this information and this Wyatt thing, and he helped with the Man in Black going, and it led to nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it really left me empty with Teddy, and I felt really crappy about that.
Yeah, Teddy, I agree. It's like, I liked his character interactions, but his character arcs in terms of the overall plot point were just unnecessary. Even at the end, when you're just like, he's the end of my story. Here's Ford explaining the story. And it's like, he didn't cause this to happen. Man in Black did. He's drinking behind you over there. He stabbed her, and that's why she's dying right there. Is that part was your story for the Man in Black? Which I kind of think it was.
I think it was. Yeah, like, it was I think for him. What? So the major plot point was Ford's story,
right.
And we get a grasp of the fact that we talked about where we learned what the maze was, and Ford's repentance towards the AI, well, at least in his words, the repentance towards the AI in order to have free them, mm-hmm. You know, and he didn't want to open the park because if he opened the park, it would cause all these people to come in and ruin all that because they just want to run them back to to basics. And he knows they're much more than basic. So that was kind of interesting. The whole progression for Dolores, and he thinks that she can make it to that level, and he keeps doing all of these things in order to help her out. So that was interesting. What I found the most interesting was he sees Bernard and he talks to Bernard, which, by the way, he doesn't even seem fazed that Bernard is still alive, which says to me he knows Bernard was going to be right. brought back to life again, right? Yeah. So that was kind of weird. Yeah,
nothing fazed.
But we remember back to episode 2 or 3 where they talk about that you can tell an AI from a human by their touch or their hand. If you have a handshake, you can tell immediately that there's a difference. If you notice in this episode, there's a scene where Bernard and Ford shake hands when Ford says basically this is the end of his run here and he's ready to move on. And they zoom in on the handshake of him and Bernard. So it says to me one of two things. Mm-hmm. One, that's not the real Ford, which, by the way, has been debunked by the creator, and saying it was the real Ford.
It was a real Ford.
A real Ford, but not the real Ford. Okay, yeah, yeah. So that's
used
the crazy part.
A real Ford, which is very interpretive. So either he used the word a real Ford in that interview they were talking about, I think it was on IGN, or he mm-hmm. used the, and the writer put the wrong word in there. But man, I'm looking into that word a way too much.
Way too much. But the handshake means something, because that we know that you can another AI can tell the difference between a human and a non-human just based upon that right. shake. And so, but they smirk at each other. And so it was either him passing the torch on to fake Bernard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or yep. it was, hey, I'm not real. You're not real. So P.S., the body that's being made down in my basement is another version of me. So we'll
or
see.
I'm that
we'll
body
see.
That was just made in the basement about to get shot. And
but the whole point of Ford's story was to get Dolores to the consciousness state where she heard her own voice, mm-hmm. which she did down in the basement. It's really weird where she sees herself.
Right.
It goes from Arnold to Ford to basically her voice, and then she realizes that's who she's talking to. So her first conscious decision as a human being is, well, an AI, is to shoot Ford, which is exactly what she did 30 years prior when she killed Bernard. So it's really scary that that's the case.
Yep.
Like it's, but that's that he wants to go out as God. And if you want to go out as God, you get killed for or martyred for the same thing that your predecessor did.
Right. And the thing is, like, we know now her personality was merged with an extreme cult leader, Wyatt. That merger still exists in her code. That personality still exists yes. in her code. So mm-hmm. I think we can see some inner conflict between sweet farm girl Dolores and Wyatt's murderous cult leader in future episodes. That's going to be, I think that's going to be an interesting take on how they're going to show her development.
So moving into season 2, yep. there's the chance of having all this mystery, and I'm fearful because I remember how amazing season 1 of Lost was, and then subsequently how crappy progressively every season of Lost was after season 1. This screams murder, action, mystery type show for me, but without any of the major plot drama that went on in the first season, and I hope that that's not the case. Like, I hope that they don't try to make this run and gun and don't give this all the care and the time that it needs, because the reason why it works so well is because of all of that buildup. The buildup was the reason why this show worked mm-hmm. in the first season.
Yeah, it was set up completely scripted from start to finish. Every twist and turn was completely planned and had meaning towards the end. I really think their 5-year written plan is going to continue to weave. I don't think we're going to have the major surprises we have. I don't think they're going to hide as much. We're going to be more surprised by a plot twist, by instead of something yeah. that was right in front of us the whole time that just wasn't revealed. But I think they'll do more on the plot twist side. There's a lot of open storylines that they didn't close out.
Elsie?
Yep, Elsie. Oh, did you happen to see the ARG?
No.
So there was an email that went out to people subscribed to Westworld web, the little Discover Westworld thing online that's like a fake site for the park. It went out to everybody, and it had the word in there. It had a bunch of letters in big gray, and it spelled out Reverie. If you went back to the site and typed it in, it made a glitch and showed Elsie in the park, like showed like a little map of the park, and it has like a little person's picture, and it had where Elsie was in the park, and then it gave, and then it, somebody, it had like a source code that it put up on the screen that somebody cracked, and the source code was Elsie's voice saying, "Hello, is anybody there?" So it just proves that she's alive. And so, which we knew, if you don't see them die on the screen, they're still alive, but it proves that she's alive. And they're kind of, I like that, that they're like, we don't have episodes to show you this stuff, but we'll show it to you different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. They have to figure what's happening with her. They have to make very clear what's happening with Ford, whether he was right. The real Ford or the non-real Ford or the body double Ford.
Episode one, please. Yes. Don't drag that on.
Where Dolores' character goes from here. Because at this point, she's a leader in the AI. She's the only one that's fully sentient and conscious, aside from Maeve, but they don't know each other. So is Maeve fully conscious? Was the decision she made a conscious decision? That's yet to be seen. And also, you have to know where,
Ashley Stubbs?
Ashley Stubbs, yeah. Stubbs,
yeah, the Hemsworth
is
brother. Yeah.
Is he with Ghost Nation? Because Ghost Nation came out, and Man in Black got shot right in the arm, smiled about it, and was like, "Oh yeah, now it's on."
Yeah, this is
like, he took the shot. He's like, "Man, that hurt, but it's real. Awesome. Let's play."
Yep.
And so like he's ready to go.
And so that means, and if I remember correctly, it was the prostitute underneath Maeve. She was the one that shot.
She was, yeah. You know what?
And it's probably
Clementine.
Yeah, Clementine. And she had to be using a real gun, just like Dolores was. The majority of the guns in Westworld aren't going to be real, so the chances of a lot of the people not shot by Clementine or Dolores surviving is going to be high. And so I really think there's no way that William dies there, that he just goes all out.
He doesn't, and I think this is a mini spoiler, but the fact that Ed Harris said that he was going to be back for season two. I mean,
it's an episode or two, he'll be back for stuff.
Yeah. And so like, we know that Evan Rachel Wood is probably going to be back. I would be my guess. Oh, yeah. Like, it hasn't been announced, but I would assume that she's going to be back. Anthony Hopkins is a very major if. Like, if to the point where if I had to guess 50-50, I'd say probably 30 he's not back, or 30 he's back, 70 he's not back.
I'd be right in that line. And just in flashback scenes. Yeah,
just in flashback scenes, because I think that it was a mistake, and as far as a real Ford, I think it was Ford. And the only thing you're going to see is like minor flashbacks where they can pull him up for like a few seconds, and they've already cut those. We know that Maeve is probably going to be back. I would hazard a guess on that, only because she had to go back into the park to look for her daughter. That's a great sub story, even if they like to bring her back into, which I think it would be really good for them.
Yeah, I think a major sub story that I really hope they delve into is right now there's two AI that have become conscious through the maze, Maeve, Dolores. I think they have different motivations, and I think there'll be two separate leaders of the AI community that will be fighting each other as to which way are we going here? Are we killing them all, or are we just trying to get our freedom and leave and live in the world?
Let's not forget that Bernard could be a conscious version at this point, or could be on his way to a conscious version, because he let Maeve know about the fact that this was not like not her plan. So he either, like, I feel like he could be running the park right now, because the other thing that that is left way out in the wind is what happened to Mr. Abernathy. He wasn't downstairs, and he was supposed to be carrying all the information.
He's for
Nescorp. Yeah, so
I think he's with that group that came in, because that entire group was the group with Clementine that were that were attacking the board members. So I think he's somewhere in that group that just didn't show him. But I think I thought they would have shown him if he would have been so.
I thought so too. So which still there's just part of me that lingers that says, is he out there somewhere or did he escape, or meaning like did they send him someplace like with all that information? And then is Ghost Nation really all of just the hobbled, or is it something different?
Yeah,
we don't know.
And they're in that and they're in that secret section of the park that the Ford's old house is in. So something else is going on in that section.
I was going to bring up Ford's old house. So the reason why Ford has himself as a child and changes his father to be this abusive person is because we learn now that the only way to make one of the AIs conscious is to cause pain. And so the father is intentionally abusive because it causes pain to the child. Which is why when the dog was attacking, the dog killed the dog, killed the dog, and said, "Well, Arnold told me." It wasn't Arnold; it was actually himself that told him, and it was his it was like a conscious decision to try to save everybody else. But the child isn't strong enough yet. So is Ford trying to like basically fix himself in order to become conscious, like as an AI?
Right.
So that, that's the only reason they're alive.
Making the Ford as an AI. Assumption right there, right?
It is. So there, because there's still a lot in the wind.
Yeah, because there's one big thing in the wind though. Teddy defines the maze. The man who lives in the center of the maze built a house. We assume that that's Ford's house, and if we assume that that's Ford, the person in the center of the maze died many times and came back to life, which we don't know about Ford. But if he is an AI, and he's dealt with many issues with the board and other things, and a lot of stuff. He hints at something along those lines when he takes out completely blanking right now. Bernard's girlfriend.
Oh, when he takes out. Oh, I know who you're talking about. Damn.
Yeah, Teresa.
Yeah, Teresa.
Yeah, when he takes out Teresa, basically hints that this is not his first time he's been back into a corner like that. So he's come to life, died and come to life many times, according to Teddy. I think that line about defining who's the man in the maze is not a throwaway line and should be really seriously considered that Ford, if Ford is an AI, that's as evidence to prove that.
And the other thing that I, before we jump off this, this subject, was that when they went on lockdown, the lockdown immediately protects anybody who's on the board. So they're already worried about these AI transitioning and turning on them. Because when that thing went down on lockdown, the first thing was protect the board, protect the board, protect the board. So all the board members that got lit up like a Christmas tree in that little presentation by Ford, which, by the way, was an intentional committed suicide just to make a point and to take out some of the board members on top of that, was all done at the end of the show on purpose so that all these people could be taken out. And then it looks like a conscious decision by the AI in order to make that happen. So. Right. This is the long con by Ford. It's worked out really well. How they decide to take season two is going to be the biggest decision on whether the show proceeds in a very high esteemed manner, or if it just goes away and it just happens to be like another one of those HBO shows.
Right, and I think them coming out and saying 2018 really puts a lot of pause. Like, people want stuff right now, but they also wanted stuff with True Detective, and True Detective, the head of HBO's TV. Came back and just apologized and said, "We did this too fast. I'm sorry." And I think they learned their lesson there.
Yeah, they don't want to overcommit. And if you do, it's going to cause a huge issue. And if you think about the way the seasons are set for HBO right now, they don't really have a ton coming out in the spring. They're going to have Game of Thrones coming out summer-ish. And then you're going to have a lull. Probably one of those episodes that you're talking about, because you may end up having another True Detectives, or for sure they have like three or four continued series, and then you might hit a early spring version in 2018 of this show, which by all means, hopefully they don't have the episodes hit with like $100 million over $100 million budget. They're not going to have this thing anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you can have crazy expensive episodes if you're making your money back. I just hope that they had enough buzz and enough people subscribing to HBO Now and getting HBO subscriptions and buying this episode to to make it worth its while moving forward. So.
Well, I'm going to let you know something. I don't have enough buzz. I've only had a little bit of bourbon. I've only had one beer, so I'm ready to go into Game On.
All right, and first one in a Game On is our tried and true Destiny. Iron Banner's back this week, and yours truly right now is sitting on a 21-game win streak in Iron Banner, whipping
from last Iron Banner.
No, right now, I played about probably 45, 40-ish games, but I've won the last 21 in a row in Clan.
Nice,
yeah,
nice.
And it's just been great murder sprees. I've had my largest kill game in Destiny. I had 40 kill game yesterday afternoon. Yeah, it's just been so much fun. Like middle of the week, a lot of the tryhards were trying to get, they were getting their rank 5, getting their packages, but then trials hit and they all disappeared to trials and they already had their packages, and now if you're a coordinated group like we are in the Clan, it's just pub stomping. Even if they had a couple of guys that were lighthouse ready to try, like good PvP players, you can still just coordinate the hell out of them and beat them in Rift. And it's been so fun.
I haven't had a chance to play. Like, I really haven't had a chance to get. I haven't had a chance to do much lately. Like, honestly, I haven't touched a controller. I was bemoaning the point you guys were making fun. In 5 days, like, it's been a while. You know, life, work, that kind of stuff. But definitely something that I want to get into. Like, I really wanted to play Iron Banner just because of the opportunities at some of the weaponry. The 13th, I guess, was the major thing that I was looking forward to, was the start of all of the new exotics and being able to pop Icebreaker.
Yes, it's
for
back.
for the dawning. Just trying to find ways that PvE or, you know, like major PvP to do strike levels where I can actually hop in and just like go for points and stuff like that, where I'm not jumping into PvP. I think I just without it being real super sweaty, I guess. But as like you're saying, Cajun, the fact that it wasn't super sweaty while you were joining, you know, where you're playing yesterday. So
yeah, it was. It's just been. I've had a lot of fun games, a lot of fun matches, and some people just don't like Rift. To me, it's captured a flag with a center flag, like I said last episode. It's just a different mindset of captured a flag, and if you're just playing a captured a flag mindset, you can have a lot of fun playing as a team in that game type. So I've had some really good, some really fun matches in that one. We had, and day before, we had three out of four matches were mercies. We mercied the other team 3 out of 4 matches, just stomped them.
That's crazy. I know. I mean, I know that we're into Destiny, or we're into Destiny. I know, Brandon, you talked about the fact that, like, sometimes when you're away from a game, just because you're away from it doesn't mean you hate the game. It just means that you've kind of moved on from the game. And I know that you've been into a different game right now that you've been playing pretty heavily.
Yeah, I've been playing the crap out of Titanfall 2. Right now they got their double XP weekend going on, so I've just been throwing it into the mixtape playlist, which is a mixture of all the different game modes, and it just randomly selects which game mode and just go through, and I've been leveling up like crazy. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
If you had to take and talk to, you know, our audience on what a PvP version of Titanfall 2 is compared to, let's say, a PvP version of Destiny, how would you compare the two? Or, like, what are some similarities, what are some differences?
I think Titanfall 2's a lot faster paced. Like, you're always on the go. Always on the go. You can't really get frustrated. It seems like the connection's better. I hate to say that, but it really does. I had one match the other day, and it was because I had like 4 different devices playing Netflix or whatever in the house right at the same time, that my connection was a little crap, and I could see a little bit of a stutter. But it other than that, that's the only issue with connectivity I've had at all.
Are there any similarities? Like, I mean, when in gunplay or in feel, like, is there any similarities in the two games where somebody could transition? Obviously, you have, but like a person could transition from that type of gameplay in Destiny to, like, say, a Titanfall, and not feel like such a huge gap or a huge distance in between the two.
Yeah, with Titanfall 2, they got a mode called Pilot versus Pilot, which is just no Titans. You just take your guns and kill the other guys in the face.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It takes a little bit of getting used to, especially trying to figure out how each of the different Titans work, because there's, what, 5 different Titans, and each one has their own special little abilities, plus there's different pilots that have different abilities as well, and they're all completely swappable and customizable. You can do it mid-match and not have to worry about it at all.
Awesome.
I know you and Damien have been playing. Like, what are your thoughts about the campaign in general, like the campaign for Titanfall? I know that there's some people out there that are kind of questioning, you know, the original Titanfall on Xbox, it was all right, but it didn't have a whole lot for me. But at this point, I believe you could find it for as little as, what, $29.99? Like,
I love the campaign.
Anywhere? Yeah.
Seriously, the campaign, worth it. Really good storyline, really good gameplay for the campaign. I wasn't a fan of the ending, but that's my personal preference. But I've actually went through, beat it all the way through on normal mode in about 6.5-7 hours. And now I'm going back through and doing it on hard mode. So it's got replayability because you got normal, hard, and then master.
Does the single player version of the game prep you for the PvP version or not?
Yes and no. It gives you a basic introduction to the PvP and allows you to get familiar with some of the different type of controls. But in the story mode, there's different things that you won't see until you're like way leveled up high in PvP to get some of the abilities unlocked.
So if I'm a noob jumping into Titanfall 2 into PvP, and I'm all right at Destiny, like I'm okay, like I can, we'll use me for an example. I'm barely a 1-1, like 1-2 kill KD, right? What's my swing trying to get into Titanfall 2, because the speed is much more uptick. Like how difficult is it for me to try to transition into this game?
Knowing you, you'll get frustrated as hell.
Okay.
For the first couple months until you get used to it. Like, even with me, I mean, I'm not great at PvP. I'm not horrible. I'm somewhere right there in the middle. And I haven't had a positive KD yet.
Oh, wow.
That's tough. I mean, but I'm also late to the game, and there's been people that are... it matches you up not by level. So, like, say I was level 7, I was seeing level 37s in the game with me.
Is there a damage fall off for that? Is it... level
no.
engaged? Okay. Do they have better weapons?
It doesn't matter. Well, they have unlocked weapons.
Okay.
Because every weapon, every power for the weapon, the sights are all level locked.
Okay.
Now, when you win matches and level up, you get credits, and you can buy those with the credits you've earned by playing the game.
Gotcha.
And you can unlock something early.
Noticing as those weapons have been the differentiator in some gunfights, or it's just like right now those people just have many more hours played and know the map.
It's about 75% more hours played. Gotcha. And 25% weapons.
That's kind of a bummer. Yeah. Is that a balancing issue with that?
It's just they've been playing the game longer.
Okay.
It's like you going into Destiny for the very first time and trying to run a trials card and then saying, what the hell am I doing wrong?
Yeah, and all of a sudden, like, I come out of, like, Suicide Tunnel on Rusted Lands. And you're like, where did he come from? He's just all of a sudden behind this shotgun in my butt. Like,
yeah, they already know all the lines that where they can get from one side of the map to the other side of the map, doing wall runs and everything in half a second.
Yeah. See, this is where the match-based skill-making and versus the connectivity really kind of takes that turn, because it's really rough for somebody like myself to come into one of these and just get my ass kicked for 2 months, because I won't even invest 2 months. I'll just be like, all right, after a week, I'm done.
They do have private matches, so that allows you to go in there, learn the maps, learn the different lines, things like that. You know, 1v1 me, bro. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I know that they added a new map too, right?
Angel City, yep.
All right, and so are the private matches, is that available to public, or is that...
Yeah, public.
All right, so it's no longer beta, it's definitely a public public event.
When you look at it in the match selection screen, it still says beta, so okay. I think they're still tweaking it and working on it, but it is out there.
So they're definitely investing money into this thing.
Oh, for sure.
Post-launch.
Okay. And the great thing about it is any new maps and everything that they come out for it, all going to be 100% free.
Oh, nice. So I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well played.
That's the funny thing about Titanfall is the fact that it didn't sell quite as expected. The pub on it was down. The value went to $29 for on Black Friday for this game, but I know a ton of people that are playing it.
Yep.
So it's one of two things is happening. Either I know too many people in the same circle that are playing this game, or the game got really crappy reviews early based upon its previous predecessor, and then now people are starting to pick up on it, and they're like, okay, yeah, at a $30 value, this game is worth it. But at it's a $60 actually had value,
quite a few not. Great reviews on it.
Yep. Yeah, Titanfall is definitely one of those games where everybody talked about the story was overhyped, but was good, and the PvE was underhyped, but was great. So like it's like it's hard. It's so hard.
But it's also coming off of Battlefield 1, I think. And I think if somebody's still into that, if there's a shooter, if there's somebody who just bounces from shooter to shooter to shooter, they could still be caught up in Battlefield 1 before transitioning.
Yeah. Or it could be just honestly, I highly recommend Titanfall 2 to anybody.
So we're just talking about hype level of games, and in June of this year, a hype level for a game that we were just literally out of our minds for was Sea of Thieves. And then it was hyped for about 2 months, and then all of a sudden it was like, don't talk. Now all of a sudden they're talking again, and we've got an alpha through...
A technical alpha.
You know what? I appreciate the fact that they use the word technical alpha, because basically... I've got a few things to say about Sea of Thieves, and I love Sea of Thieves, and I love Rare. So Rare, through their Insider Program, which, by the way, if you're not a part of the Rare Insider Program, please do so. It's silliness if you're not. You get a lot of information as far as the Sea of Thieves version of their Insider Program. It gives you all the information of the upcoming game. If you listen to the Sea of Thieves podcast, they talk about the fact that they only have 10 beta testers, 10 people that test this game to make sure there's no bugs and there's no issues that go on with this game. Do you know the fastest way to figure out if there's anything wrong with your game without saying that you're having somebody test your game? Call it an alpha technical test and have 1,000 people test that game to see two things. One, is this really worth playing? Is anybody interested? And what are the things they're interested in? And two, does this thing screw up under pressure? And that's what their 1,000 people technical test is, which is happening this upcoming weekend for some unspecified amount of time. They really haven't gotten into it. If you're one of the lucky 1,000, you won't be able to talk about it because you'll be NDA'd anyway.
Yeah, it's going to only be during select hours during that weekend too.
Well, they have to, because they're pressing people to play with each other that don't know each other. You have to press people who don't know each other to speak to each other through mic and play on the same team, because the whole basis of this game. That's the other thing. If I was listening to Mia Horn's podcast over the weekend, and they were talking about the fact that, you know, does Rare even know what this game is? Are they still trying to figure it out? And I don't know what people are thinking. There is no game. This game is PvP, and you make your own game by playing with other players. There is no story mode, and there is no other way to play this game besides joining with other groups. So that's what they're doing. And so they're trying to see if that works, and if it doesn't work, you're going to see this game get delayed, and they're going to add some version of a story mode into this game. And if it works great, then they'll continue with the path they're on. But I think that they thought initially that this was going to be enough, and now after seeing The Division, they're extremely concerned about what the Dark Zone looked like and how people are going to react. And now after seeing what The Division has become after switching things to survival mode, they're like, oh, well, let's wait a minute. Right. Let's do a technical test and figure this out.
Yeah, so is anybody here got in on the alpha, or when
they were not announcing it until this upcoming week?
Okay.
I pray that I'm in it, except I can't talk to you about it if I am.
Yeah, exactly. I was really hoping they were gonna let people at least stream the alpha, so, but nope.
Like I said, this to me seems really in-house. This seems basically like an overextended version of playtest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Break break the game with 1,000 people because we've never had that many people on a server before. And the other thing is people that expect to have a full game or a full thing to play, they're playing a mission. From what I watched in the video, you're going out, you're hopping on a boat, you're going to find a treasure, you have no idea where it's at, you're using a compass, you scoop it up with your shovel, you find that treasure, you take it back to your base, you collect coins.
The reward.
Which is coin.
Right.
Which, and that's it. There you're done. Done. So, it, in reality, if you have a team that knows what the hell they're doing, after an hour or two and they get put into a secondary, because you're going to fill time slots, and I'm sure you're going to fill more than one time slot, so you're going to do it one time, and then you're going to be able to do it two or three other times. We'll be able to knock this out under 45 minutes. And then the thing that they're going to bitch about is the fact that there's no replay value. Immediately it's going to be like, well, this, there's no replay value. You can't play this game. It's so fast. This is stupid. Because people look for things to complain about.
Right.
Well, so they're in a catch-22.
Yeah, but they need to give them something else to play about.
Right? Well, you either talk as much as Bungie and tell you everything, and then everybody bitches that you talk too much. Or you talk as little as Rare, and then people bitch that you talk too little, and you don't say enough about your game.
Yeah, it's,
so it's like, where do you find the middle ground?
There is no middle because ground either, when it comes to pleasing
there
gamers,
is none.
Though,
it isn't. Cannot be.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed, and this is like, you can talk to a completely rational person, and then you start talking to them about a video game they love, and then all rationality goes out the window. You're like, what the hell just happened to you and all of those smart things?
Do I even know you?
Yeah, you're saying smart things earlier about everything else in the world, and they're talking about video games, and it's just out the window.
Well, I think I, just being from the outside, and I love Destiny, and I hate that I talk about it so much. I hate we talk about it so much. And the reason why I do is because I feel like it's such a small component of such a bigger conglomerate, you know what I mean? And the people that are in that world, it is the entire world. And so, and they don't look outside of it. And there's so many other games and there's so many other things to be doing and playing that it's so hard to rationalize the complaints and just like the constant complaining about one game. It's like, if you don't enjoy something or you don't enjoy being a part of something right now, not forever, Brandon, right now, it doesn't interest me anymore. It's not part of something that I want to do. I don't hate it. I don't dislike it. It's just boring, and I just don't want to do it right now.
That's like next week, I'll be back for the SRL and for the Dawning.
I talked to you about
totally
that. I'm in for exotics. Back. I'm way back. Let's play. And I'll get the two exotics, and then I'll be done again. Because that's, like, there's nothing else for me to do. Like, and I appreciate the people that want to play anything that deals with Destiny. So if you want to go into Trials, great. And if you want to go into Iron Banner, that's fantastic. It doesn't pique my interest anymore.
Right.
And so that's fine.
Exactly.
But when you're in it, people are so angry about the people who aren't in it or have something else to say that they can't look past the world that they're in. It's frustrating to hear because we're all together. Like, we're all on the same plane. You know what I mean? Like, but it's okay that we're different a little bit.
Right. And there's a, I don't remember if we brought this up last week, but Crucible Radio is doing individual podcasts by individual hosts, and the Birds one, he actually breaks down the video game industry from a business perspective, and it was very, very
I brought that up last week. Yeah. Yeah, with N64 Josh, that thing was awesome. And like, from a dollars and cents standpoint, it makes way so much sense. Mm-hmm. It really, really does. It's worth listening to. I can't express that enough how it was worth listening to, because it totally brings to life exactly what is going on in Destiny right now.
Right.
And I appreciate the people who are passionate. You're passionate because you love something so much that you want it to be better. And I get that because I want it to be better. Like, BioWare this week lost one of their reps who went to Bungie. And it was like, there's going to be BioWare. It's going to be Mass Effect in Destiny. Listen, if Mass Effect was in Destiny and there was that kind of storyline,
we wouldn't have these conversations.
There would be no other game ever. Yeah. Like, people would just live in that world.
It's the game to end all games. End all games.
It really would. It really would be. Which is fun, you know, it's fun to talk about it. But, I mean, it's okay to like other games. If you walk into this year and you discount, like, let's just say Mass Effect and anything that deals with Nintendo with Legend of with Wind Waker coming, or what's the new Zelda game
Breath
coming
of the Wild.
Out for Breath of the Wild? There you go, Breath of the Wild. Like, if you're just missing these games and all you're talking about is one specific game, you're missing out on so much of the gaming world. It's just like just so much. And so, not that I discount or unappreciate anything that anybody has to say about a specific game, but man, there's so much of more of another world out there for them, for sure.
Yep. All right, are we ready to start the hype train? The first thing on the hype train we're going to talk about, there's news that the new X-Men, A new X-Men film of some unknown origin or purpose, starts filming in May. We don't know if it's going to be Gambit. We don't know if it's going to be Joss Boone's New Mutants, full-fledged X-Men reboot. We don't know any of it. Right now, kind of thinking it might be a New Mutants project, but we just know we're getting something new in X-Men, and they've already said they're open to rebooting everything.
I'm hoping for it's Gambit.
Oh, God, me too. Give me Remy LeBeau, baby.
I don't think that they're going to have it be Gambit yet. I think if they're in order to get a big name character and have it out as early as expected, I think this is still at least 6 months to 8 months away. So if they're going to do this, I feel like it's going to be New Mutants, and I don't feel like it's going to be done with as high production value as something that they would do for Gambit.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because for me, the fact that Gambit's been left out of everything besides like the worst X-Men movie as a throwaway character, and he was one of the more popular and my favorite character of the series, and they threw a bunch in there that were either unnamed or very little known, it's a travesty. Come on, give me Gambit.
I can see him doing Gambit first as a tie-in to the reboot of the whole series.
Yeah. As he's a new leader.
Now, I know that they're talking about having New Mutants film with Professor X in the film in 2017. That would make sense if they're trying to film this film, this movie, and try to have it extend with Professor X in order to make it, air quotes, viable. Because, like, you can't have New Mutants not be real mutants.
Right.
So I can see that happening.
But which Professor X, Stewart or McAvoy?
I would say McAvoy. Okay. I wouldn't say Stewart on this.
I have to throw that in there as a Deadpool quote.
Yep.
Guardians 2 trailer. Have you seen that?
Oh, dude, to see Groot is so funny with the bomb. Like, it's so funny. Like, I laughed, and then I sent it to you guys, and I'm like, this is hysterical. Like, it literally made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, the feel is right there in this new Guardians trailer. They gave us everything they needed to, and not giving away anything big. I think even one of the producers or writer or director, somebody has said that this is all like in first half of the movie. So we're seeing nothing, in the second half of the movie in these trailers, which is great because I think movies like Batman versus Superman gave away too much in the third act, and we're seeing none of that. We don't see what Ego the Living Planet is going to look like. None of that. I love it.
I'm so excited for this movie. I probably watched that trailer 15, 20 times just because of the whole Groot and Rocket scene. Okay, don't touch this button.
I am Groot.
Now you tell me. I am Groot. No! No! Where's the tape? I need some tape. What do you mean? You're the one that's got a nuclear bomb in your backpack. Why do you not have any tape?
I am Groot.
Yeah, it's...
I am Groot. So... It's like, it's really, really good. If you are one of the unfortunate who haven't seen this original, please go see it. Like, please see the movie.
You.
Yeah. Yes. Please see Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a really, really, really good Marvel film.
Yeah, it's tough not to love this movie. You really have to go out of your way, and it's like, I don't like it for whatever reason. People who hate Marvel love this movie, or like this movie at least.
Now, the biggest thing about Groot that I'm excited for is going to happen in Infinity Wars. It was announced that Groot and Hulk will fight.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
So that is going to be an epic throwdown. I can't wait
for that. That could be a serious battle.
And he'll have to be fully grown then, because this takes place, I think they said, like 2 months after the original Guardians. So this Infinity Wars will have to take place in the timeline.
So speaking of the Marvel world, we got a trailer that was released earlier this week for Spider-Man Homecoming.
I was so ready for this trailer. I was like, just give me the scenes already.
It was nice to see Iron Man in this a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, we realized that the amount of screen time that he's going to get is probably the amount of screen time that we saw. Like, it's probably going to be 15, maybe 20 minutes at most. Like, it's not about Iron Man.
I don't think so. I think he's going to be through the whole thing. I think he's acting as a complete one-on-one mentor for Spider-Man. And he's going to be throughout the whole movie.
I think I agree with Chris on that. I think 15, we might see 5 to 7 minutes at the beginning of this mentor role, just like, hey, this is what you need to do, kid. No, really, this is what you need to do, kid. Like, two of those scenes, just tell him what he needs to do. And then he needs help at the end. And then Tony Stark comes in at the end, and they fight together at the end as a pair.
Yeah, seeing Stark early, I think, is going to be a big thing. I think seeing Stark when Spider-Man gets the web wings is going to be a big thing. And then I think at the tail end, when he needs more than just himself in order to help out on this mission, he'll see Stark one more time as Iron Man.
Right.
And that'll be the end of it. But if you throw Robert Downey into too much of this movie, it becomes
another Iron Man. Exactly. You can't be too, and, it has and to so, be a kid Spider-Man yeah. dealing with high school problems that a high school kid has as a kid Spider-Man.
Yeah. So if you've been watching the trailer and you've been reading some of the interest in it, there's a huge connection between this Spider-Man and Miles Morales, which is the extension of Spider-Man, which is the new Spider-Man. And people have been in some severe complaints about the fact of how the storylines almost match up identically, yet he is not of the scent of the current Spider-Man that's being played right now. So I think that it's a valid complaint. Like, if you're going to rip from the storyline, don't rip from the storyline and then not have the same person, like the same ethnicity and character, play the same character. Like, don't rip it. Just either say it's this or it's this, right. but make a choice.
And speaking of the Miles Morales Spider-Man, did you see that Donald Glover is actually in this new Spider-Man movie in the trailer?
Oh, yeah, really?
He's like, he's standing behind like somebody. It's somebody who has a gun, which looks like it's Iron Man's hand on the end of it. Like, they took one of Iron Man's like gun, like his suit hands, and put it on the end of a gun, and the guy is shooting it, and standing right next to him is Donald Glover, who was rumored to be Spider-Man as Miles Morales in a reboot way many years ago, and it just became an internet thing of everybody wanting Donald Glover to do that.
My biggest fear is that the main bad in this movie is not going to be bad enough. Is Michael Keaton going to be able to play bad enough that it's like, really?
Yeah, he is.
His chops have been on point lately in the movies he's done. And I think he'd be able to. I think he's going to pull off his villain character just fine. But I mean, people questioned him so many years ago when he was Mr. Mom and he came in as Batman, and then questioned everything.
Mr. Mom.
He's had some good chops lately.
Didn't he do Multiplicity?
Yeah, look, he could do four roles in one movie.
Yeah. She touched my
peppy. She touched my peppy Steve.
Damn.
So good. I love that movie so much. And that comes out, so Spider-Man Homecoming comes out July 7th. Guardians of the Galaxy comes out May 5th. War for the Planet of the Apes comes out July 14th. Have we seen that trailer yet?
Trailer's pretty badass. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, I mean, first of all, like we just talked about less than 2 or 3 minutes ago, I'm like, Woody Harrelson, are you serious?
He's distracting. But just even in the trailer, I'm just like, I don't know. I don't buy him right there.
It's so weird because, like, every time I see him, I just think of him as goofy bartender on Cheers, like, which really bothers me. And I'm dating myself, but, like, I can't get past it because he's the same guy and or White Man Can't Jump. So, like, it's one or the other, but he's always the same dude.
Yeah, and I thought he did fine in the Hunger Games movies. As a reader of the books, I really didn't picture him in that role at all.
I didn't either.
After I read the first book, saw the first movie, then read the next of them with him in mind, and it helped, but still, it's like he wasn't a distraction. He got better later. To me, his crowning achievement was True Detective a few years ago.
Yeah,
it was
for sure
amazing role. He just did such a good job in that. And but yeah, I was actually distracted just with the scenes they picked from him in this trailer.
He was definitely able to take it to the next level, and it like, and like we were talking about earlier, certain people have certain characters that they portray, and so it's hard to break that mold. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll do a great job in this. It's just, it's going to be difficult for people to get past certain aspects of that character. That's yeah. all. But as far as the trailer was concerned, it looked like a great continuation of the story.
Yeah. There's one scene in that trailer that I really wish someone put in. It's the one where Woody Harrelson, who's main villain, puts the gun to Caesar, the main hero's head. So we know at some point Caesar is captured. If it happens early in the movie, we know he's going to escape. If it happens late in the movie, he may or may not die. But I still think that scene should not have been in the trailer.
Not have been in it.
No.
Totally, totally agree. All right, so let's move into This Week in Geek.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
On December 10th in 1993, video game developer ID Software released the game Doom, and Doom is considered one of the most influential game titles in video game history, which, by the way, was released last year and hit as a big sleeper hit with Doom. So, like, if you watch, Doom has won. Noclips did like a behind the scenes, is in the midst of doing it right now on Doom. And it is one of the biggest sleeper hits of 2016. People anticipated this game to be less than subpar.
Oh yeah,
for a game that was released on a game from 1993, and
they expected Duke Nukem.
If you play,
they expected Duke Nukem.
Exactly. And if you play FPSs, this game was one of the top five FPSs of 2016. If you haven't seen it and haven't checked it out, please do so. It's on sale. You can get it for. At this point, dirt cheap at $19.99. You like fast plays, first person shooters, Doom is it for sure. And it was that on this day that it was released in This Week in Geek.
Yeah, it's 1993. That is a long time ago. But in
that is a long time.
December 7th, 1999, the Recording Industry Association of America sued the peer-to-peer file sharing service Napster, alleging copyright infringement for allowing users to download copyrighted music. And man, just started the Napster is bad meme of
Metallica.
Metallica. Oh,
no.
Oh my God. I
oh
love
Oh my God. I used so to much. Love this.
Enter Sandman. Enter Sandman.
Metallica good. Napster bad.
Lars Ulrich just running around. There it has money in it. We need the money over here. And we have gold everything. We need more money to buy more gold.
Money, more money.
Money. Oh, so good. I need to watch some of those again, and they were great.
Yeah, for sure. Finally, December 3rd, 2001, inventor Dean Kamen unveils the Segway, self-balancing battery-powered vehicle on the TV show Good Morning America.
The first time I rode a Segway was at Disney. I was in Epcot, and I got to test drive one for a little bit, and it was a lot of fun, but trying to lay your weight one side or the other in order to make a move was a lot of issues.
I've never ridden one.
Yep. We've ridden a few, and I do have to say, if you're in a new city, taking a Segway tour to get around a city center to see all the sights, do a Segway tour, is my highly recommended number one thing to do if you're touring a new city. It's so much fun, just cool to run around doing it. But the number one piece of side evidence that I hear people misquote all the time is they say the inventor of the Segway died on a Segway, and that is actually incorrect. It was the primary owner of Segway who bought, he had the most shares, I think, at the time. He died on a Segway going off a cliff, but not the inventor. So you can correct people if they say that.
Okay, why would you not jump off the Segway if you see you're going towards a cliff.
No, I think he was just close to the side and just kind of did a quick turn, is my theory. And he had what's called a black key in, which is a Segway is always speed limited depending on the color of key. And he had a key in that let it go max speed, which Segways can go really fast. So he was just cruising on like a side of a dirt hill and just went boom, right off the side.
Side note, can't do wheelies on a Segway.
No, you cannot.
Oh, so I think that's going to about wrap it up for us this week for Geekologist Radio.
And in
Geek. We've had all kinds of technical problems and everything this week. It's been a really weird, strange week for us. Chris, where can we find you?
You can find me at Two Wolves, TWOWOLVZZ, at pretty much anything.com, Facebook, Twitter, whatever not. Cajun Saint.
Yeah, Cajun _ Saint on Twitch, all of the Uprising Family Gaming Network, Slacks. And yeah, it was interesting this week trying to get the episode in, but it was also interesting if you might have noticed Beefouts not talking much in the middle of the episode. We actually lost him in the middle of the episode. His entire internet for like 1,000 people got DDoSed in his neighborhood. So yeah, yay.
Yeah,
yeah, DDoS.
Real fun. So I had no internet for about an hour in the middle of the recording, and luckily I was smart enough to not hit the stop button, so we were able to save it.
Yep, and he's messing us. Keep going, keep going. We knew we were struggling to get this recording.
We're like,
and I don't know
Westworld, we could talk for 2 hours. Yeah, yeah. Let's go.
Exactly. Okay, and for me, you can find me on Twitter at @BE_FOUTZ. And you can find all of us at geekologistradio.com. We have some good articles up there, and hopefully we've got some more coming soon. Our Twitter for our Geekologist is @geekologistradio, minus the T because of character restrictions. Thanks a lot,
damn
Twitter.
Restrictions. Yeah.
And for all of us, this has been episode 17, and we are meowt.
Oh, I just ripped one hell of a fart. I heard when you said that. That was great.